For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Today on Sticks In, we're talking the big news of Lyle Thompson taking a sabbatical from PLL play this summer and not taking the field for the Cannons. We're also going to, of course, look back at all the college lacrosse action from the weekend in the NCAA tournament. We had one of the best weekends we've had in a long time. Once again, if you are enjoying the podcast content, by all means, like, subscribe, leave a review, all those things that your podcast platform allows you to do. And do make sure you visit sticksandlacrosse.com. The current rosters for PLL have been updated there. All of the gambling lines for the college tournament updated there. It's going to be your place to get all the info you need this summer. And thank you for coming back. Let's do it. All right, Tuesday episode of Sticks In. Welcome back, everybody. These Tuesdays have been a little bit different lately. We don't have Tuesday top 20s anymore because there's no top 20 polls right now. We did still have an absolutely incredible weekend of college lacrosse. It was indeed one of the best weekends of NCAA tournament lacrosse I can remember. Those early games in the tournament, you always get kind of the couple gems in there. You know, like you got kind of with Delaware, Georgetown last year, some really good battles and everything, but it's been a while since I remember that many really spectacular games. And even the blowouts had special moments. So before we get to that, of course, there's that massive piece of news in the pro lacrosse world, the PLL world. Lyle Thompson announced that he is going to be taking a one-year sabbatical from PLL play and will not be suiting up for the Cannons this summer. He did say he will return in 2024. His contract with the Cannons runs through then, so obviously he still stays under contract with them while he's on a sabbatical. Then he'll become a free agent the year after he returns. But this is massive, of course, for a number of reasons, most of which are pretty obvious. Lyle is MVP finalist a year ago, the reigning attackman of the year. I believe he was the highest scoring player in the regular season a year ago. He's going to be up there making multiple highlight plays a week. Fans, young and old, love to watch him play. The impact is going to be big. You can't state enough kind of how many ways in which it matters and how big the impact is going to be felt. So, I mean, the most obvious, the way the Cannons compete on the field is going to be different. Their best player, by far, is not going to be there this summer. Last summer, there were moments where Lyle was just downright unstoppable to the point where it looked like some teams might not even bother trying. Like, they take a defenseman who's not even really always the top defenseman, but just somebody who could keep maybe trying Lyle going in one direction so you can slide to him a little easier, and then just leave that defenseman on an island, and then you dare the rest of the Cannons to beat you. And obviously, more often than not, they couldn't do it. That obviously won't be the case this year. The good news here is this offense is going to look different. It was going to look different either way, right? New coach, tons of new offensive personnel. This redesign was already happening. I don't think it would have been reasonable to expect the offense to look the same as it did a year ago. Rolling the ball out again to do more of that was never going to be the plan, Lyle or no Lyle. But, you know, his absence opens a spot to move one of those converted attackmen that they have from midfield back to their natural position. I think the odds-on favorite for that would be either Asher and Olting or Ryan Drenner. They seem like the most likely candidates to me to join Holman and Kavanaugh at attack. Donville could Charlon Beatty's could, Rafis could, but those three, I think, are all much more comfortable, and it's just a much better fit to have them out of the box than it would be for Nolting or for Dredder. Either way, this offense now is going to have to be built to win 6v6. There's no one out there who's going to just say, give me the ball and I'll take care of it. There's nobody on the field who can do that, look quite like Lyle can for just about any team. So the offense is definitely going to look different. You know, so that's the first and, again, most obvious place where you're going to notice that Lyle isn't there. Next, there's a front office, you know, GM salary cap impact to this. If you assume Lyle was on a max deal, probably a safe assumption, but who really knows? You know, assume Lyle was making more than the league minimum by a decent amount, then that means he's probably allocated most of the money that the Canons could spend over the cap. So, like, as a refresher, the cap is $735K spread across your roster, and the team has to spend 98% at least of that cap. So if Lyle's on sabbatical, he's getting paid. Sabbaticals, as I understand them, just Googling them, looking up how they work, sabbaticals are typically paid leave. So IL did report that Lyle's deal won't count against the cap this year because you're going to treat him like a holdout player. But and then we can nitpick about, you know, whether that's a sabbatical or some other kind of leave. That's for another day, whatever. The thing is, if his deal doesn't count towards the cap, not only does Holman have more money for the roster, which, like, sounds cool, right? He has to spend it. You have to spend 98% of the cap. You have to have that money allocated to somebody. Which, again, like, all right, sounds great. Spending spree incoming, right? We're going to go sign a bunch of players or something. Except all the free agents have their deals already. You can extend guys you currently have, which bigger deals, so, like, sure, I guess. But you still only have the 25 roster spots, the 19 on game day. You can't be signing someone from the player pool to a Lyle Thompson kind of deal. I mean, you could, if you want to get ugly about it. The money's not guaranteed, so you could just for 1 year and then cut the guy. But, like, any way you slice it, there's kind of some tough outcomes on the financial side of things there. Again, this is just, like, my read on it. I don't know if I'm dealing with complete information or not. But the likely answer here is Lyle is on a true sabbatical and you know, getting paid and everything, and the money doesn't count, so the Canons can do what they want with it. But by now, there's just not as much stuff to do with it as there would have been, you know, 2 months ago at the start of free agency. So next obvious impact for Lyle, the marketing impact. You can go ahead and just take a scroll through all the PLL social pages from last season, the league's account, the TLN account, the Canons account, whatever, take your pick, and just look how many posts of them are Lyle. From the Canons account, obviously, in particular, but he's everywhere. I don't think that there's an impact in the way of merch getting moved. Like, plenty of Lyle jerseys are still going to get sold here, both online, at venues. He's still a megastar who, even in, like, ordinary plays, looks extraordinary and will do extraordinary things and gets pumped on social. But someone has to fill that gap, that getting pumped on social cap. PLL is still a league that clearly hangs its hat on its extremely robust social presence, right? That's what they're all about. Everywhere they go, it's multiple platforms, social platforms, highlights as soon as they happen, this team of photographers, videographers, all these people capturing every play on video from multiple angles. The highlights there, you know, they love to post the camera person running up from the field up to the computer to pump that highlight out right away. This is something that they really are proud of their efforts in this area. So there's going to be more to use, but there's not going to be Lyle in any of it. Every team has a mega star for its highlight package every week, right? I mean, to start going, like, Archers with Schreiber and Amon, Atlas, FT, Costa, Beal, and you know, Baptiste, and Chrome, you have Wisnowskis, you have Farrell, who's always going to be big personality. Hanley's going to be everywhere for them. Chaos have all their, you know, you get the idea here. Who's that highlight crew for the Canons right now? And can they do it just in terms of volume, what Lyle did in social media every week? I don't know if there's, you know, an easy way to do it. You can't do it with one person. So there's an answer to that question. There's a crew of people that will be cranking out highlights and everything, highlight plays for the Canons. I just don't quite know what that looks like yet. So the Canon staff and the players definitely don't care. They just want to win games. They do not care who's cranking out the highlights, but the league might. as you look for marketable personalities, the league might kind of care who emerges as that social media star for them. So, you know, and again, as an extension of that a little bit, there is a visibility piece of this visibility. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but what I'm trying to get at is the connection between indigenous people and cultures and the pro lacrosse atmosphere when it comes to the PLL. Lyle was that person who kind of represented this bridge between a pro sports league that's built on new age media, social, you know, video pumping highlights, but also like red carpets, style, all that. That's all in there too. That flash that other pro sports leagues have, but brought to lacrosse. You know, they rub elbows with Barstool. They're kind of corporate. They're big. They have the big name sponsors, and you know, there's a lot of money there and everything. So, but at the end of the day, it's a sport from the indigenous people, and the league works very hard to keep that at the core of the identity on game day. And that's a very difficult balancing act, right? To be like, we want to appear on, pardon my take, we want to go on Barstool, but we also want to make sure we're super conscious of the connection that our sport has to the indigenous people who might not love that relationship as much. You know, I don't want to speak for parties here, and I'm starting to do that, so it's probably not responsible of me, but you kind of get where I'm going, where there's, you need to balance something that is honorable for the indigenous community, but is in today's world that the PLL wants to be in. So, you know, it's tough to be fired up about your giant new corporate sponsorship one day and, you know, tweeting rocket emojis with to the moon a million times in the replies. And then you try and in a social media post a second later, soberly explain and maintain this relationship to the natural, the spiritual, and dare I even say religious parts of the medicine game, right? Lyle strikes that balance because everybody knows who Lyle is and what he's about. You know, the PLL does land acknowledgments before these weekend games. They acknowledge the ground being played on and the people that it first belonged to and why that's important. And Lyle's the person who does that for them. He comes on the big screen in the stadium and does a land acknowledgement. And you can find other voices to do that, sure. But you're not going to find anybody who's going to do that and then step on the field right afterwards and play with the joy and the creativity that's just completely unparalleled that Lyle Thompson have. And that's significant to me. As you're keeping the indigenous people a central part of what the sport is about, Lyle definitely makes that easier for the PLL because he's a superstar and does it at the same time. That's one of a kind. So maintaining that connection, maybe Lyle stays close to the league somehow and is able to still do that while he's, you know, not playing. I hope that works out that way, but I'm interested to see kind of how that balance is maintained as the summer goes on without Lyle on the field. And then, you know, finally at some point there's going to be the impact of when Lyle does take the field somewhere else this summer. Yeah, again, PLL ain't the only game in town in the summer, folks. The Man Cup is still going to be played. Lyle has played for Six Nations in the past. He played for them last year in a handful of games after the Canon season was over. World Championships are this summer. From what I'm told, Lyle still looks like a go for that. You know, he's still kind of participating in some team activities. So maybe he's made a decision that's changed in that regard as well. He kind of made it sound like PLL was really the part of the sabbatical announcement that would be affected. So, you know, does the league acknowledge highlight plays when he puts them out? If he's in San Diego at Worlds and he does something incredible, are we going to see the Canons account pump it as Lyle has decided not to play for them this summer? What if he does it for Six Nations? Will TLN post that? Will they all share the great things that Lyle is doing? As he had said, I just need a break from lacrosse for the summer, from the PLL for the summer. You know, the struggle that I kind of have with it is that the relationship between PLL and leagues and some lacrosse entities that aren't the PLL has not always been great. Progress has definitely been made with the NLL in particular, but that's still a relationship that needs some work. I think I'll just leave it at that. Last year, you know, the PLL famously and contractually did not allow their players to compete in the Man Cup, kind of forced some very talented players to make a choice. Some did not opt for PLL play. If Lyle's summer off is really just a PLL summer off, the way PLL fans experience that is going to be interesting. And I'll also just add, if I work for ESPN, I'm not excited about this news at all. I'm not loving this. It is very different marketing a weekend with Lyle Thompson as the headliner, you know, as opposed to literally anybody else. And the Cannons, you look at their schedule, all their games are on ESPN Plus except for one. When they're in Connecticut and they play the Chrome, that game is on ESPN2. But pumping up that game, I'm sure part of the plan was we're going to pump up Lyle Thompson on ESPN2. And now you got to find another way to do that. Chrome will have personalities to pump up. Cannons, by then it's week five. Somebody will have emerged as the star of that team to be the primary billing. But it's not, again, nobody is the same as Lyle Thompson. Totally different animal there. So, you know, Lyle, from what I've heard, from everything I've heard, is in need of some recovery time, and he's definitely earned it. The guy's lacrosse season never ends. He never stops playing the game. And, you know, again, from what I hear, his body could just use a break. He's banged up, and he needs some time to just get healthy. And I'm sure it's worn him down. As he said, he needs some time to focus on his body, his family. So I hope he gets to a place where he needs to be to feel physically and mentally 100%. And then I hope he comes back to summer field lacrosse, to the PLL. As a fan, it's just not the same without him. You know, it's don't want to ever get to a place where you don't get to watch Lyle Thompson play lacrosse anymore. So I hope he gets to wherever he needs to be, whatever recovery he needs, whatever, you know, he needs to get himself in a better space. I hope he finds it while he takes the summer away from the PLL. But that's the big pro news. Elsewhere, the PLL 30-man rosters are set. Teams bring those 30-man groups to training camp, and then at the end of camp, they cut back down to 25. So those five extra spots allow teams to create competition at roster spots that maybe aren't as deep, where you feel like maybe you could be better. And then you get a look at some guys who you might not be sure about, or, you know, you give guys a chance to make an impression, right? The guys that get dropped at the end of camp, sometimes they just get picked up flat out by another team for another team's 25. But then also keep track of when guys come out of the player pool during the year, it's often guys who were at camp, right? You get to camp, you get a chance to build a relationship and a rapport with a coach, with a system, with a scheme. And the players kind of then, even if they don't make the 25, the coach knows, I can go back to that guy. He was with us at camp. When my midfielder gets hurt, I'm grabbing that midfielder who was with us at camp out of the player pool, and we can go ahead without having to try and get this guy into our system when we only practice once a week and all that. So the guys that get to go to camp have a great opportunity, even if they don't make the team, to latch on to a club and kind of become that guy who, you know, gets called up for a weekend game when they need somebody who's hurt or somebody's got to go to a wedding and we need a guy to fill in, that kind of thing. So it's important for all 30 guys that go, for sure. It is not just like roster filler and warm bodies and bring them, then cut them, and then forget them. It is never that way. The players are important, and the coaches definitely think of it that way. I track rosters myself using whatever info the PLL announces publicly, and I keep those rosters updated at sticksandlacrosse.com. You can head over there. You can see who's on your team's roster. I keep – there's 30 people on the roster. Almost every club has more than 30 guys. But guys are on holdout lists. Guys are on pup lists. Guys have military exemptions. There's a bunch of different ways that a guy could not count towards your 30. The rosters that I keep show you all of those guys as well. So if you want to see who's on the Atlas beyond the 30 and who's on the pup list, who's still on the team and all that, or why isn't this guy at camp? Oh, I can go look. He's on the holdout list. That's why. All that is at sticksandlacrosse.com. So you can head there and you can, you know, see who's going to camp, all that good stuff. All right, let's talk NCAA tournament. Because that was, again, one of the best weekends I can remember in a really long time. But the way it started, it didn't seem like maybe it would go that way. Right? The first game, UVA blew the doors off of Richmond despite the weather delay, which was hilarious because the sky just opened up and it became a typhoon. And then they had the weather delay and the field was basically a pond afterwards. But hey, look, they got through it. So 6 points for Schellenberger, 6 goals for Cormier. Cormier's such a good player. He's such a critical piece for them, too. He has some of the best hands in the country. He's always dangerous around the goal, but, you know, Schellenberger is the real monster here, and when May rolls around, he elevates his game like crazy. 6 points against Richmond. Go back to last year, 8 points against Brown. 2021 in May, 5 points against Bryant, 7 against Georgetown, 6 against UNC, 6 against Maryland. The calendar flips to May, and Schellenberger just has another gear all of a sudden. You want that big-time May player. You want Shelly. So Richmond, look, they bring back some solid players next year. Lance Madonna chief among them. I think he's really, really good. They'll be a contender in that conference. They'll probably return to the tournament next year. I think they'll be good enough to have a shot at it for sure. But they couldn't match up with the depth of weapons that UVA brings to the table. So UVA advances. They will play Georgetown next week. The over in that one, I'm sure, will be a popular bet, or at least a fun bet, I should say. That game was followed by another game that was never really close, Notre Dame and Utah. Irish win 20-7. Everybody's in on it. Pat Cav, 7 points. Jake Taylor, 5 goals. 13 saves on 19 shots for Edelman. Team manager might have had a point in this one. You know. Lynch was 79% facing off, and if Notre Dame gets that, if they get dominance from the faceoff spot, just forget it. You know, the Irish even had, it was a great highlight, the long pull to long pull to long pull for a goal. It's not often you see those. Eric Dobson somehow finished this game without a point. And the Irish hit 20 goals. That's how good they were. So some of the goals just appeared easy at times for them, to be honest. Look, they were green and gold buzzsaw. They go deep at multiple spots. They overwhelm teams that can't match up with them in a 6v6 from that first guy down to the sixth guy, because Notre Dame's seventh, eighth, ninth guy will also beat you. It's like UVA in that regard. They're just deep that way. I thought Notre Dame would be in the 20 neighborhood. I didn't think Utah was winning this game, but I thought Notre Dame would score about 20. I was looking for a final score, though, of something a little closer than we got. I thought it would be the track meet. I was thinking it would be like 20-13, you know, 19-13, something like that. Because the Utes have weapons. Stein's serious player. Jordan Hyde's back. Tyler Bradbury's back. That's already 162 points back next year. I kind of said it on social, but like Utah's highest scoring senior was Sammy Cambert, who's going to the PLL now. It was all their offenses all returning. So they had one of the highest scoring offenses in the country. It'll be back next year. They'll be an A-Sun threat for sure. It'll probably once again come down to, you know, them and Jacksonville outside of a Bobby Moe or Air Force spoiling the party. We'll see what happens there. But Notre Dame's got a date with Johns Hopkins next. That'll be one of the more popular games of the weekend, I think, for sure. After that, the games got quite good. Georgetown-Yale, I'm still catching my breath after watching it. I needed a cigarette afterwards. The game had everything. All the star power you would want. Dordovic, 6 goals. Minicus, 7 points. Solomon, 5 goals. The heavyweight transfer portal guys doing their thing for the Hoyas. Defense and goalies definitely sold separately in this one. The Yale attack did their thing, as you would expect. They had 14 points. I think Chris Lyons has really been spectacular this year. You know, you think back to last year, he's kind of like a mid-season insertion into the lineup as a guy who can, okay, he can play off of Rambo a little bit, and, you know, he's good off ball, and he's a decent shooter, and all that. He's a bona fide star now. In the Ivy title game, I legit wondered if Cornell would switch Gavin Adler onto him because he was winning off the dodge so easily. He is a do-it-all attackman who just happens to be playing in Brandau's shadow a little bit, and I think that makes him even more dangerous. But the Lions' glow-up this year has been very, very fun to watch. There's no third defender, maybe in the country, that can handle him or anyone else on Yale's attack. So Yale brings that entire attack back. Maybe it'll be the best attack in the country entering next year. The Hoyas, they still own the longest winning streak in the sport, 13 games. That 3-game skid to start the year feels like ancient history, man. And probably we overreacted at the time and never, like, course-corrected afterwards, because two of those losses are Hopkins and Notre Dame. We're now going to the Elite Eight alongside Georgetown. So Yale needs to get better on the defensive end next year for sure. You know, they gave up 15, 19, and 19 in their last 3 games. That's a tough way to play. It's really tough to go a whole season just trying to win games, you know, 18, 16 every week. So the defense, I'm sure, will be a focus for them. There's good young pieces there. I think Hackler is a great short stick D-middy. You know, Alexander, I believe, is back again next year. He's a good defenseman, but you know, they'll be looking, I think, for some defensive help or just, you know, a better defensive play next year. Somehow the nightcap, by the way, after that one surpassed the Georgetown Yale game. Army and Maryland playing an instant classic. No Paul Johnson for Army, no Ajax Zapatello for Maryland. So important injuries there, but it didn't stop the game from being absolutely unreal. I thought this game would go as the face-off battle went when I kind of previewed it last week, where I was looking to see if can Coletti keep Weirman from running away with the game, basically, from just winning consistently and owning the pace and tempo. And if he could, then Army has a shot. If he can win the face-off battle, Army can win. You know, I thought if one side could tilt it, really, then the score would follow that. And face-offs were nearly 50-50 in this. I think it was like 48-52, you know. And the game came down to the final second. So the face-off battle, I think, was kind of indicative of how the game went. But the Terps, look, they felt a little vulnerable coming in. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Terps hater or a Terps shill. It's tough for me to know which. I've been called both in the past week. It's just tough to adjust your expectations for a team coming off a history-making season. The return to Earth is probably what everyone's ready for, but you still just, it's tough to, like, process it in real time. You know, you're still kind of thinking about, you know, just how absurd that team was a year ago. Watching them play just run-of-the-mill, above-average, really good offense and defense, just solid top five, top 10 team level defense, as opposed to, you know, devourer of worlds level offense and defense. It's tough to like adjust that sliding scale for them. So I think losing Molliver for the season was really tough for them. You can't say enough about how good Braden Erks has been, a freshman running the show at Maryland. I mean, that does not happen very often. He's excellent all year. 4 goals and an assist against AJ Pilot in that one. He's back. Spanos, Trader, Chorus, Maltz, I think, can do a grad year. Zapatello, Kelly, Weirman, Murphy, all back. So Terps will enter next year a top five team. Army's magical season rolls on. Keep the change, indeed. You know, I hope next year they play a more difficult out-of-conference schedule and challenge themselves a little further. But anyway you slice it, Al Ricci and staff have done a masterful job. Their players are in a position to be successful every week. They lose 19 seniors. They're still in a position to win every week. I think Vespierik is a spectacular attackman. I have him in my All-American ballot. I will say I don't think those have come out. Those probably, you know, those usually, I think, come out on broadcast at some point. I think maybe this weekend. But I don't think there's a team more likable than Army right now. If you're not a fan of or an alum of one of the other schools still in it, I think you're probably pulling for Army. Going on to Sunday, it started off like Saturday did, not with a rainstorm, with a blowout. Bryant got run off the field by Hopkins basically in like the middle of the second quarter. The overpower started. Everyone kind of got to go run some Mother's Day errands, which was very thoughtful of Hopkins. Bryant, look, they had a solid season. They are a team that wants to play an up-and-down game, but it wasn't in the cards for them because they had just some self-inflicted wounds, you know, some bad turnovers, and it felt like every time they made a mistake, any little error, Hopkins just punished it the other way, and the Bryant defense just couldn't ever get settled in and weather the storm. I thought Degnan was going to be the guy with a huge day, and he did lead Hopkins in shots. I thought he was going to have plenty of chances off the ball to just let it rip with Angeles and Melendez, you know, drawing slides. But it ended up being Melendez, the trigger man there, as the star. 9 points is a Hopkins record in a game. 9 points in a playoff game, I should say. Do you have any idea how hard it is to set Hopkins records? It's like setting basketball records at UCLA or Kentucky or something. Angeles, 5 dimes. English, a hat trick. Plenty of players got to get on the field in this one, which is great. By the middle of the third quarter at the latest, it kind of became, all right, let's get through this thing healthy. Hopkins gets their 12th win of the year. I believe that's their 12th win. And that turnaround has just been incredible. Blue Jays fans, you got to be feeling good about this return to the elite. It's been a tough couple years. They get Notre Dame next, as we said. That's a chance to really take a special step this year if they can manage a Final Four appearance. I think it'll probably be the game of the weekend for a lot of fans. I can't wait to watch that one. I think it's going to be really good. All of the remaining Sunday games, tremendous. All one-goal games. First one was Cornell and Michigan. That one was an OT winner for the Wolverines. I'm so happy I get to keep posting that Wolverine gif. This has to be the best season Michigan's ever had. Every week, they are reaching uncharted territory. Andrew Darby played his ass off against CJ Kirst. Some of the toughest play I think you'll see all year. There was some very physical. Kirst putting his shoulder into him. Darby fighting it off. I said it on social, but Darby, the last 2 months, the last eight games in particular, has been at an All-American level. Lockdown, great attackman, multiple times. Jack Myers, TJ Malone, Ross Scott, Braden Erksa, now CJ Kirst. Every single one of them, when they were guarded by Darby in the last eight games, came in with a stat line where they were below their average in points, goals, and assists. He's playing at a special level. The question for in this game coming in, I think, was who does Gavin Adler guard, and can the Cornell defense stack up well with the other matchups and attack? In the end, the Michigan attack all handled it, I think, pretty well. Impressive outing for them. Beam 4 points, Zawada 2 goals. Late in the game for me, it was Beam really making things happen as you would expect. Particularly in overtime, Michigan kept going to that big little look with him behind, and the double would come and they'd stick with him and he would dump the ball. And on the game winner, he dumps it to Clay, who attacks GLE. He's able to skip it cross crease to Thompson for the game winner, but they were able to just get that consistently, create little 5-on-4s against Cornell and just say, we can move the ball faster than you. So Michigan's doing everything well right now. The attack looks great. The defense and Darby looks great. The two-headed face-off monster is incredibly difficult to deal with. So Michigan gets Duke next. Darby and O'Neal will be a good one. That's Darby's toughest matchup of the year for sure. And he has guarded Kavanaugh. And I don't know if he guarded Schellenberger in their game, but it'll be his toughest matchup for sure. Michigan's in house money status right now. Can you imagine them in the Final Four? We're a game away from it. It's that kind of year, though, folks. Next, we got Duke and Delaware playing to another one-goal gem of a game. This was more Delaware playing well than Duke playing badly, I thought. Delaware gave the Blue Devils all they could handle. Owen Grant, Brendan O'Neal was a battle within the battle everyone looked forward to. They had themselves a really good fight. Brendan finished with 1 goal and 3 assists. The 1 goal was superhuman as he just reached his massive frame over a scrum of players and plucked the ball out of the air and then put it past Kilcarry. But look, Owen Grant held Brendan scoreless for three quarters and change. So, OG did quite the job there. Delaware jumped all over Duke early, I felt like. Their offense was kind of clicking early, but ultimately I think that face-off success from Premtash wasn't sustainable. Naso ended up taking over. Duke got really, really good two-way contributions from Ledman, as you would expect, and then Denenza and McGuire. McGuire made a couple of big juice plays for them. He had himself a day. And I thought that's kind of where the big plays were made with those two-way midfielders. The other guy to call out, of course, is McAdory. Caught fire in the second half. He had those 3 goals in the third quarter, the last of which I think gave Duke a lead. So him catching fire, I think, started the kind of this blitz and got the tide rolling in Duke's favor. And then, the Blue Hens just kind of struggled to get really quality looks, I think, down the stretch. So, look, Delaware +6.5 was the easiest of easy money. But Duke got the victory. They get Michigan next. And then the nightcap. Princeton and Penn State. Princeton out to that early lead. The switch to his own was really, I think, a decider in this one. But the switch was based entirely on the fact that nobody could guard Colter McAsee. 4 unassisted goals and just cooking people in the process. Like, there was zero answer for him. So the move to zone made sense because you couldn't guard him in man. So he's been excellent all year. And you can't say enough about it because this is a Princeton team that lost English. Sandoval is out, and you've seen some nice face-off play from them in Sandoval's absence. But Rhonda out in this one, broken collarbone. It's one injury after another for Princeton, and it just is more offensive responsibility heaped onto McAsee every time it happens, and he's shouldering it all. Every week you say, we need you to do more, and he says, I got it. So he's had an excellent year. The two major adjustments for Penn State were, as we said, Carr in the broadcast explained them both really well. The switch to the zone, Princeton just couldn't create good looks anymore. It drastically slowed the game down. And then the second, Penn State kind of went to this invert kind of look. All their attackmen were above the net, and they dropped their middies down low. They made Princeton defend from behind and on the wings very well, and they created good look. It was just magical for guys like TJ Malone and Jack Traynor. Just kept getting great looks. So that just kind of, I think, wore through that Princeton defense. And then, you know, the Tigers go down. That's all three Ivies losing. Sout outcome for us nerds everywhere. Penn State goes on, like Hopkins, an incredible bounce back season. Three wins a year ago, and now they're a game from the Final Four. So it's been that kind of year. But, you know, all right, the quarters are set. The teams from a year ago, the eight teams left in the NCAA tournament a year ago, were Cornell, Delaware, Maryland, UVA, Rutgers, Penn, Yale, Princeton. One of those teams is back in the Elite Eight this year, UVA. The other seven are all watching from home. That's how you know it's been a good spring. These next games, this Elite Eight round, if it's half as good as last weekend, it'll be spectacular. It'll be spectacular games again. We will have full game previews on the pod later this week with the gambling odds, and info is already up over at sticksandlacrosse.com. If those move before game day, they'll be updated. We'll have some great more written content this week. Again, if you're liking the show, please leave a like, subscribe, review, 5 stars, thumbs up, whatever it is, and let me know what you like. By all means, hit the mailbag. I do want to have another little mailbag pod soon because I've gotten some really good questions that I just haven't had a chance to answer, but that's today's episode. So thank you for talking Lyle Thompson with me, talking College Lax with me, and thank you for sticking around. We will see you.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.